Welcome, 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 everybody, to the Hockey Think Tank podcast brought to you by thehockeythinktank.com, a website for anybody that loves the game and wants to educate themselves a little bit more, whether you're a player, a coach, or even a parent. And before we get to this episode, I want to say a quick thanks to Robbie Shremp for our last podcast. His openness and honesty, it really resonated with a lot of people. We had a ton of feedback, and to be honest, the podcast pretty much went viral. And one of the things that I love about doing this podcast is that you know, everyone that listens gets a unique and amazing perspective on the game from some really cool hockey people. And it also it pulls back the curtain and gives people some inside access into the depth of our great game that they might not have had before. So, you know, I've learned a ton from everybody that we've had on the podcast, and our hope is that you have too. So, thanks for all the feedback, and thanks to Robbie Shremp for a really unique and awesome episode that we had last week. And this week's guest is honestly, he's not a lot different. And we're really excited. We're going to keep the foot on the gas pedal for this next one, to have Cam Jansen, who is honestly one of the toughest players of his era in the NHL and possibly even ever. I'm going to give you guys a pretty amazing stat right now. Cam played in 336 NHL games with the New Jersey Devils and the St. Louis Blues, and he amassed 774 penalty minutes in those 336 games. And that's on top of the 657 penalty minutes he had in the AHL and 748 minutes he had in the OHL. So, Cam is a pretty tough customer. But you know, on top of you know, obviously being tough and being an enforcer in the NHL, he's also one of the game's most colorful and hilarious and honest people. And he's parlayed his great playing career into a media career right now that's landed him his own radio show, and he's become one of the analysts for the St. Louis Blues for their games going on. So we're really excited to give you guys the conversation that we've had with Cam. But before we get to him, let's introduce my partner in crime, Jeff Lavecchio. Jeff, what's going on in St. Louis today?
How's it going, Toski? Just murked three steaks, so feeling good. Protein content is high.
I'm happy for you. I'm happy for you. I had a soup and a salad, so
you know, keeping it light and tight.
Light, I wouldn't say tight, but we'll see. But you know Cam really well. You grew up, you know, in St. Louis where he grew up. He was a year older than you, and I know he had a huge effect on you. So how much fun did you have on this podcast, and what are some things that you took out of it?
You know, this is one of my personal favorites. I mean, all of mine, everybody we call is a favorite of mine. I mean, Robbie Shremp's was just unbelievable. His candidness was amazing. But, you know, I was really excited to do this one with Cam because he is one of my personal role models, personal idols I looked up to coming up in hockey in St. Louis growing up. I mean, anyone who knows this guy, you walk into a room that Cam Jansen's in and immediately he just pulls people in. Like and he's not like him, like put on a show. It's just his personality. He's an energy giver, like we always talk about. And when you're around him, like you just feel like you could friggin' wrestle a bear or something. I mean, I wouldn't. I don't know. I would just tap on Cam and have him do it. But the guy just gives you so much energy. I remember coming up, but I don't know if I was I was probably in college, and you know, we'd all skate together, in the summers, you know, all the, you know, quote unquote, like higher level guys in St. Louis. So it was a bunch of NHL guys, AHL guys, college guys, and just talking to him and him like instilling in me, like, yeah, you can play pro hockey, Jeff. Like you can do this. You're fast enough. You're strong enough. Like, and things that I never really, you know, I mean, I thought in my head, but I didn't have an NHL guy in my corner that I looked up to saying that stuff. Like he just gives people life. He's just a great dude. And this was a super exciting and fun podcast for me.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I couldn't tell from how you were talking right now. So, it was awesome. I had met Cam before, but never really knew him. And just to hear some of the stories that he told, he's an unbelievable storyteller, by the way, first and foremost.
Yeah. He's a beauty.
Yeah. But just hearing him talk about his time in New Jersey and kind of the culture of the Devils when they really had it humming, when Lou Lamoriello was their GM and Brodeur was, you know, the goalie and all that kind of stuff is pretty cool to hear him talk about how they taught him how to be a pro and what it meant to be a professional and how to go about his business and stuff. And Cam obviously had some fun while he was playing, but he learned how to be a great teammate and a great pro, and he was just an all-around good guy. And, you know, the other thing, obviously, I had mentioned some of his statistics previously, and he was a tough dude, man, absolutely tough dude. And the one thing that I thought was really interesting about hearing him talk about being a tough guy and playing that role when we asked him about it was, like, most people who are enforcers in, I mean, there's not that many anymore, but, you know, in his era, most guys who were enforcers, like, did it because they had to. You know, like, it was the role that they had to play in the NHL and make their mark. So they kind of had to be that guy. They didn't necessarily enjoy it. Like, Cam did it because he loved to fight. Like, it wasn't something he had to do. It was something that he wanted to do and loved to do and lived for it. So it was really cool to hear him talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, being from the same hometown as him and knowing, like, what he did to prepare to be able to fight all the guys that he, cause I mean, he's not a super tall guy. Like, I don't know. He'll probably tell you he's 6 feet or something, but that's BS. He's gotta be like 5'10 and a half, 5'11". I mean, he's a square. He's just like carved out of a mountain. He's a boulder. But, like, man, this guy did fighting training and, like, skating all the time when other guys were taking months off in the summer. Like, he just prepared himself. And if anybody who's listened to this has never heard of Cam Jansen or never watched his fights, go watch YouTube right now and you'll just see a guy who, I mean, he was notorious for making fights go on and on. He'd be waving the refs out. He'd be pumping the crowd up. You know, he'd kind of, like, let the other guys get tired and then he'd just come back just throwing, you know, his hammer fists that are, you know, the size of bowling balls basically at guys' heads. That's not something you just do. Like, you have to train your ass off to be able to fight the way that he did. What I think is even more important is that a guy like that, you don't stick around just cause you're pretty good at fighting. Cause it's not like he was the best fighter. I mean, he's a really good fighter, but he wasn't a Brian McGrattan, like, type heavy, like, you know, one of the best in the league or something like that. He was very good. Don't get me wrong, but he must've been just such an unbelievable teammate in the locker room. So, like, for kids to listen to him and hear about his energy and how happy he was, like, that's what he brought to the team. And that's something that lifts the team up every single day. So that's a skill. And that's something that everyone should practice and try and be an energy giver, like we talk about, and not somebody in the locker room pouting or, you know, throwing daggers in guys' backs or the coach's back. Like, be an energy giver, not an energy sucker.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. No, he definitely has a lot of energy. That was very evident from the talk that we had. And I think he's just an all around great guy. So, I had a lot of fun talking to him. I know you did too. So, let's hop over to our talk with Cam. We have a really special episode today. We have a longtime NHLer and great personality, Cam Jansen, here on the podcast. Cam, how you doing today?
What's up, guys? What's going on?
Cam, we're very excited to have you. I've known you since I was probably in, I don't know, fourth or fifth grade. I remember playing against you the first time in AAA Spring League, and you cross-checked me right in the throat. That was the first time I ever played against you, and you were the scariest human I've ever met. Not much has changed, but we just wanted to have you on here because, I mean, obviously everyone in St. Louis knows you. I'm sure everyone in New Jersey knows you. Everyone in England knows you from your 1 year over there. You're a presence everywhere you go. You're a magnet for energy. You're one of the coolest people I've ever met. And every time I'm around you, I just get jacked up to just do life. So wanted to have you on and talk about your journey coming up through St. Louis and kind of how you made it. So, you know, where did you start in St. Louis? How did you start? And let's go from there.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, and I'm sorry about that throat of yours. Cross-check people. Yeah, more of an elbow is my game.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I grew up. I really grew up in House Springs. You know, which really makes it even Eureka is more into civilization than House Springs, in my opinion. But we, you know, my mom and dad. Our whole family, you know, the whole Jansen family, really, we didn't know hockey, okay? We didn't know the game. We never played the game. My parents never played. My uncles never played. They played football. They wrestled. They did all that. But we loved the Blues. We were obsessed with the Blues. So that doesn't mean that you necessarily know what to do with hockey, how to play it, where to go, what avenue to go down, what stick to, we didn't know anything. But again, we loved the St. Louis Blues. My parents used to take me to Cardinals games all the time, and I'd get bored, and I'd walk around like, what do I do? What to do? But they'd take me to a Blues game, and I'd just be addicted. Be like, whoa, what happened there? Dad, why'd he cross-check him? Whoa, why'd he do that? Whoa, look at the puck. Like, it just was so entertaining. And the fighting aspect of it, I just was obsessed with. So, like, Brett Hall was the best of the best. He got us into everything. You know, like, he was a superstar of all superstars. But I loved the fights and things like that. So I was addicted. Now I was obsessed with it. And my dad got me into roller hockey over in All-American in South County to start. And that's kind of how my journey began, starting playing roller hockey, not just there, but in my basement, because we had a concrete basement and we just went down there and rollerbladed around. And again, I just got obsessed with it.
That's so cool. And a little story about that. So everyone who knows Cam knows that, you know, technically he would have been called an enforcer, a fighter, whatever you want to call that type of player. But I'll tell you what, we would show up to the rink in the summers for just a summer skate. And this guy would be there, first guy there. Sometimes he's got his rollerblades on. He's rollerblading around the parking lot, stick handling. Or he'd be in the locker room by himself, shirt off, gitch only, just stick handling with his orange ball just for like half an hour before anybody else even gets there. And that's why he was able to make it. He did these things that no one else would do. And, you know, I don't ever want to chirp anyone. You made it to NHL. You made it way further than me. But it's not like you were the most skilled guy in the world. So when did you kind of realize your niche as you were growing up? Because you played tough as hell, even when you were 12, 13, 14 years old. So when did you realize your role and how you had to play to be successful?
Well, I never really realized I needed to play that way to further my game and to, you know, excel in these leagues and things like that. I did it because I liked it. That was just me as a person. You know, I'm crazy and I'm wound up and I'm like, I'm just wild. And I think hockey got me to it was able to let me bring out my personality and walk around, you know, just being like, I didn't be like, oh God, I gotta go hit this guy because I need to make it to, no. I wanted to hit guys and I wanted to beat guys up. And I know that sounds morbid, but I did. And if hockey really wasn't there, I don't know. I just don't know what I would have done. I mean, I played every single sport. I was, you know, getting kicked out of soccer games because I wanted to hit guys. And I just was a physical guy when I was a kid. I know. And my poor parents were probably like, what the hell are we doing with this kid? And hockey just kind of let me express that. So, it wasn't necessarily, again, me figuring out my role. Like, this is what I got to do. Now, a lot of guys are like that. Even ask Reed Lowe and a lot of these NHL, these tough guys are like, yeah, you know, I knew I was big. I wasn't fast. I wasn't that skilled. So I figured I'd have to fight guys. Well, that wasn't me. I wanted to do it. So my role just kind of molded to my personality. Does that make sense?
No, totally, totally. And, you know, your first stop out of youth hockey was playing in the NAHL. I'm pretty sure you were the youngest guy in the league at that time. And I'm sure the rules back then were, it was probably no age cap. So, I mean, I remember watching you, were you 15 or 16 that first year you played for the Sting in the NAHL?
I think I was 16 that year. Cause I was 15. I hurt my back and they had to send me back down to AAA. Okay. I had a weird random injury in training camp. Like the first injury I've ever had my whole career at that point, which I played for like 6 years before that. I started pretty early. But I remember that, and I remember looking at Rick Zombo like, oh, I was this close to making it as a 15-year-old. And I think that was probably for the best, because as a 16-year-old, like, you know, I think I hit puberty when I was 12, to be completely honest with you. But when I was 16, no doubt about it. But but at 16, though, like that age difference between 15 and 16 was huge for me. And then I went over, and I was so much bigger than everybody in AAA that last year. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah,
like it just was like, okay, am I gonna get kicked out of this game? Is this poor kid is he just gonna crumble in the ash when I hit him behind the net and get kicked out of this tournament and have to drive 12 hours back? Like that kind of stuff was happening. It just was frustrating. And then finally I made that St. Louis Sting team, which the whole organization at the time was a disaster. I mean, Rick Zombo was a coach. and he got fired. And then we went through like a slew of coaches that year. And I look back at it now, like if Rick Zombo was the coach that year, he would have developed my game so much more than anybody else did. And I don't want to take away from all the other coaches. I'm not going to bring their name up. Zombo got fired at the beginning of the year, and I look back at things now, and I'm like, damn, he really would have helped me with my game. But that year in the Sting, yeah, man, I mean, did it develop my game? No. Did it make me learn how to be around older guys and hit older guys and fight older guys? I mean, I fought like 35 times that year. So, yeah. I mean, I learned how to stick up for myself, and I got obsessed with it. And maybe that was great, maybe it wasn't. Maybe I should have figured my game out a little bit more at that time. But, God, I just fought, and I just got my confidence up so much, beating up these guys that are 20, 21 years old. And I got my ass kicked, too, here and there, but not much as a young kid, not much. And I was like, oh, God, and your just confidence goes so far, man. Whenever you're doing that, you're like, no, I wasn't scared of anybody. And so that kind of helped me, in my mind, get to the next level. And before that, I was able to get drafted in the OHL. So, yeah, that year in the Sting necessarily didn't develop my hockey game, but it sure as hell helped my confidence up fighting all those guys.
Yeah, I'm sure. And what was it like when you went to the OHL? Because you were pretty young when you're going up there. Obviously, you're going up and living in a different country, and it's more of a professional type league. You know, you had a great career in the OHL. You won a championship in Guelph. What was your experience like in the OHL?
Oh my God, man! the best decision I've ever made as a family, going up there, leaving everybody, you know, in high school and leaving my little cozy Eureka town. And my buddies and everything, and going up there, just little town in Windsor, and living with a couple that was 85 years old.
Oh my God!
With a bill, yeah, I know, I tortured them. yeah, I did.
But they loved you. And you love them. I'm sure.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. And I tell you, you go to this. You know, when you're at home, you're just in high school. You're going to high school parties, and you know, you're trying to prove to everybody that you're, you know, I'm a hockey guy. Look, guys, look, I got drafted to the OHL. I tell all my buddies and everybody at school, like, what is that, the NHL? I'm like, no, it's the OHL. I'm like, well, what's that? I'm like, I don't really know, but I got drafted by them and I'm going up to Canada. But in these little towns, man, like you're the man there. Like it's like a mini St. Louis. Everybody watches Windsor Spitfires. Everybody went to your games. And that blue collar town just kind of took me in, man, because I went out there and I fed off the energy of the crowd. I wanted to be the most popular guy. I wanted to go to these bars. Like I told you, you know, all my buddies are going to high school parties, like, yay. And I'm going to these, you know, clubs downtown Windsor, walking through the back with all the boys, big dogging it, you know, doing this. Like, it just, you own the town and you guys. You know, the superstars of that team were the kings of the town, and it just was the coolest thing in the world. And everybody's watching you. You're on Sportsnet. You're doing this. You're there. And I just went up there and just fed off everybody and became extremely entertaining. And, again, the confidence, you know, kind of drove me through that year, and I played really well. And I had 45 fights, put up like 25 points. And the Devils, Marcel Pornobo was a scout there. And he kept telling Lou, you got to watch this guy. And the year after that, I got drafted by the Devils, fourth round.
Yeah, that's awesome. And Cam, I want to go back to just something you said when you were talking about your time in St. Louis, and even you just mentioned it there, and that's confidence. It's interesting you say that because, you know, fighting is obviously a huge topic in hockey right now, whether it's good or whether it's bad. And when I was coaching at Cornell, our head coach was a tough guy. He's from rural Durham, Ontario, and really appreciates that side of the game. And not even necessarily the fighting, but just playing tough. And he always did something when we had our end of the year meetings, and we would have a kid that came in that year, for whatever reason, maybe he was a little bit timid, you know, not very confident, never really liked to get physical. He would always ask them in the summer to take boxing lessons. And we want you to go and we want you to box. And the reason why he did that was, hey, having like creates confidence. You have to, you know, be tough, and you have to take some hits, and you have to learn to be assertive. And we'd always give him, it's called the assertiveness workbook. And we'd always ask him, hey, can you go take some boxing lessons? And, I thought maybe you would think that that was something that would be interesting. And do you believe in that? And I just, in from hearing you talk, it kind of sounds like that's something that you went through as well.
Oh dude, I started that bad boy in St. Louis, man. So here's what I did in Windsor. I knew, you know, I'm fighting everybody, just, you know, doing what I had to do. But I met up with these guys in Detroit, and you ever go to a blue collar boxing gym, man? They're just, it's nothing fancy. It's just concrete walls, a ring, some crappy pads, and you just go, you know. So I would get up at 6 a.m. and go over to Detroit and box in Windsor, and then go to school, and then go to practice. And I started that, and I learned how to punch in my left hand. So it just took you to another level, and your confidence again, boom, skyrockets after that. And that kind of led me in to whenever I got to, right after I got out of Windsor, I wanted to keep doing it. And so I called up Jesse Finney in St. Louis over here, Finney Mixed Martial Arts. And I went in there and I started boxing with them. But then I kind of created a hockey fight training instead. So yeah, it's great to box, but we kind of morphed that into hockey fight training, where I had a towel over the guys. I know I put my poor trainer, I tortured him. I mean, I'm ripping his neck up, you know, I'm breaking his wrist, you know, but we like molded it into a hockey fight training instead of just boxing. We grab on and throw for 2 minutes and then do this and do that and use bands. And we just kind of created this cool thing. And now we got guys in there all the time. Like Chris Thorburn goes in there. Patty Maroon was in there with Bullock. Like all these NHL guys started doing that as well. But my dad dropped me off. I remember when I was, 18, 19, when I came back to St. Louis after juniors, and I started this hockey fight training, and I did it for 15 years. So it just was the best thing in the world. Cardio, confidence, punching power, everything, man. I recommend that for everybody.
Yeah. So for anyone listening who's younger, because I know we have some people who are younger that listen to this, and you don't, if you've never heard of Cam, I urge you to YouTube him immediately. Cam Jansen, 2 S's. He was very well known, obviously, for fighting and his energy and his high energy style play, physicality. But what he was most known for with his fights, where he had the best endurance in fights. He would always come on super strong at the end when the other guy would get tired. And basically what I think he was just saying was he got confidence from that hard work that he put in. He started, I mean, you just heard him. He was playing in the OHL, a kid from St. Louis, where, I mean, what was there, one or two guys who went to the OHL before you?
I don't think there was, Jeff. I think me and Jason Constantine and somebody else would get drafted, but he was in the queue, and I think I was the first one to the O from St. Louis. I could be wrong on that, but
I never
not
heard
many.
It.
We had no idea. We had no idea what it was.
I went to Western Michigan University, a D1 school. I never heard of it until they contacted me. I was playing in juniors. In St. Louis, we were completely sheltered growing up. I mean, Cam is only 1 year older than me. He's an 84 birth year. I'm an 85 birth year. I had no idea. I had the Sarnia Sting call me and tell me they wanted to draft me. And I was like, what's the Sarnia Sting? What's the OHL?
I had no idea.
I remember when you went up to the OHL, and I was like, what, where's he going? Like, he was playing in juniors here. What's the difference? You know,
night, day. Oh, big difference.
Yeah. Just a little bit. And then you go out there and you're up boxing before school in Canada, living on your own. Like, if that's not taking your career into your own hands and building your own confidence and your own inner strength, I don't know what is. I mean, you made your career happen.
And don't forget too, like, I also signed for a couple hundred grand. So I got drafted. It all came so fast. So I even had a little bit of money. And then usually that's like most players' demise at 18 years old when they sign right away, like I did. You know, a couple hundred grand when you never made anything in your life and your parents are broke. You're like, what? So yeah, I partied like a freaking rock star. Don't get me wrong, but I still was like, God, I if I'm going to keep, I loved the biggest thing for me is I didn't want to be embarrassed ever. You know, it's like, I'm not worried about getting knocked out. Although, like, you do worry about that in front of your family and stuff like that, getting caught by a monster. But I didn't want to get embarrassed. So I'm like, if I'm going to keep this like lifestyle up and I'm going to walk around high school in Windsor like I'm the man, I got to be able to pound guys. So I got to put the extra work in. So I could go drive over to Detroit, you know, three times a week and do this. So, yeah, man, I sucked it up for sure. But, boy, oh, boy, it was worth it, man. It honestly was worth it. I burned both ends of the candle, don't get me wrong, beyond belief. But I worked my ass off as well.
Just talking about that, you know, a little segue here, burning both ends of the candle. You know, you're recently retired. What, is this your second year being retired or third?
2016 I retired from Nottingham, yeah.
So second. I can't do the math.
Carry the two, Jeff. I mean, carry the two, forever. Jeffrey.
Carry the two. I've had a few times.
Western Michigan?
You know, we always hear these old stories, you know, guys our age of, you know, the Chelioses and guys like that, that really would party hard, but also would wait, you know, they'd go out with the boys, but go to work with the men. In your last few years, did you see that type of lifestyle starting to change? You know, guys really taking their nutrition, their sleep, their health way more seriously, or at that highest level, was it still kind of at that place?
Well, that's a good question. So when I first went to the Devils, we still had that old guard in there, you know, the Richard Mathichucks and the Colin Whites and, you know, even Marty and, all these older guys are still, they're kind of like lingering still after that 04 lockout. So my first year you'd have guys and they'd be like, and I'd want to hang out with all the old guys, man. I'd like make them take me out. So I got into a routine of like going out after practice at noon with the older guys, sit at a sushi bar, drink from 12 till 5, go to another place. And all the older guys would go home at 9 o'clock because they had kids and family. And then me and the younger guys would go out after that and stay up all night and then do it all over again. Like, but at that age, you could do that. But I'd get up and I'd be the first one there, although feeling like just crap. And I'd just be the first one there and I'd just get my water and do this and get my workout and get pumped up for practice. Like, oh my God, I feel like crap, and just suck it up. And at that age, you could do that. But you're right, over time, man, your just body just wears out and you just got to tone it down. And, you know, I was kind of freakish with that, where I could kind of just get away with it for a long, long time. I don't know how, but I did. But yeah, I jammed myself up too. Don't get me wrong. Like, yeah, it wasn't all sunshine. Like, oh yeah, it's easy to just suck it up. No. I look back now like, oh man, if I would have changed a couple things here and there, would have prolonged my career? Absolutely. So, but I did it. And, you know, you learn from a lot of different things and we can get into so many different things, but yeah, the game has changed. Everybody's works out now. And you just kind of have to balance it the right way, basically.
Yeah. So for all the kids listening, he said that he probably would go back and not be drinking three, four times a week.
I mean, there's so much to it.
Yeah. I mean, that was how, you know, professional sports were back in the day. And I feel like, you know, every 2, 3, 5 years, it evolves so much in training and nutrition.
Totally.
Gets so much
not
more.
Not like that anymore.
So I'm gonna play devil's advocate to you here, because this is something you talk to any of the pro guys now, especially Cam, like you're talking about some of the older guard. You know, you see a lot more players coming up now that are so focused on themselves and themselves making it that it's kind of taken away from team camaraderie. And like you talk to older guys that are playing the NHL right now, they're like, geez, like, can I just hang out with somebody today? You know, like, cause everybody's so focused on themselves. So what would you advise kids today? Because like, I even see it, you know, Jeff and I both coach at the midget hockey level right now. And there's a lot of kids that we coach that are just like so focused on themselves and so focused on getting to the next level. And I think a lot of that comes from parents, but, you know, like what would you say to kids? Because I think you have to learn how to be a good player. Yes. And you have to take care of yourself, but you also need to learn how to be a great teammate. And you exemplified that. I mean, you were the picturesque of sacrificing for your team. So like, what would you talk to kids about in terms of, you know, that kind of thing?
Well, I don't even know it's necessarily kids. Like, don't get me wrong, I was focused on myself too. Like, you know, like, just be honest here. Like, I thought the whole world revolved around me. Like, that's just the way you thought. But does that mean you're a bad teammate? No, because I always wanted to hang out with the guys. You know, I think I played a couple extra years because I was a good teammate. I mean, just because of that. But it's not necessarily for the guys. It's more like the coaches. Like, so and the leaders of teams too. Like, so these young kids, like, have the coaches do like meals together. And I know that happens, but really, really focus on getting team-oriented stuff going on after practice, before practice, this and that. And that'll kind of organically do that. Because if you go to a kid, you need to be a better teammate, be a better team player. Well, okay, well, what do you mean? So the coach, I think, needs to kind of fill that void a little bit more than anything and kind of like guide these kids into being better teammates organically through team stuff rather than going and sitting a kid down and preaching to them about being – because it just needs to happen naturally, in my opinion. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, big time.
That makes sense.
And everybody's different too, guys. I mean, everybody's different too. There's quiet guys, there's this, there's that. I mean, you're going to have that one way or the other, but there's ways to get the team – and show off different ways of being a great teammate. But I think that's more on the coaching and the leaders of teams than anything. And, of course, the coaches have to teach the leaders to do that too. So, again, it goes back to the coaches.
That's an absolutely great point. And I think Topher hit the nail on the head too. Like, you can't just only – yes, you have to worry about your career. But I think it's more – you have to have yourself prepared. You have to be ready in mind and body. And then from there, you play your game within the team game and be a good teammate and cheer everyone on in the locker room and the bench. And I know that's what you did to use your word of the day organically, which I think maybe you've been reading a thesaurus since you got like all this shows going.
Well, I'm on the radio 8 times a day.
Yeah, man, you look crushing that thesaurus.
That's funny. Well, just talking about that too, Cam, I mean, you played in New Jersey for a long time, and New Jersey was, you know, that was kind of like the gold standard in terms of organizational culture, with Lou Lamoriello being there forever, and you got guys like Scott Stevens and the Colin Whites that you even talked about. What was it like playing in New Jersey? What kind of culture was it there, and how much did you enjoy playing there?
Put it this way. My dad... and my parents and basically my dad for the most part. And my mom was like, don't even, but my dad's the one that followed my, you know, took me to games and this and that. Okay. My dad took me so far in life as a player. Lou Lamoriello took me to the next level. And if it wasn't for Lou Lamoriello being hardcore disciplined, like you're a soldier, like, and I shouldn't say that because, you know, soldiers are different. So bear with me on that comparison, but you are. You have to shave. You have to do this. I have to be he intimidated me so much in the right way and not being a hard ass, just the way he was. I respected him so much. He kept me on my toes so much to where it just really did. I learned how to be professional, big time professional because of that man and the older guys in that locker room too. I remember sitting out one game. So I, like in 05, I remember just being a kid. And I'm playing good hockey. And I must have just a bad game or something, or maybe a numbers thing, or maybe a contract situation, whatever it was. But I sat that game out, and I walk in the locker room, and after warmups, my name was off, crossed off the board, and they put somebody else in there. And I kind of stormed out. And Jamie Langenbrunner and Marty come in the other room and go, "What are you doing? Don't you ever storm out of that locker room pissed off as a kid. Da, da, da. You go in that locker room and you say good luck to the boys." I'm like, "Oh my God, you're right. And it just, I was in shock. I'm like, "Holy cow." And I walk into the locker room, guys, and I go, "Hey, good job. Good luck, boys." And I gave them a little pump up speech. And from then on, I'm like, "Whoa, what am I doing?" Like just little things like that. All it took was those older guys to call me out, not in front of everybody, just went in the other room and go, "Don't you ever do that again." And we're like, "Oh," it just woke me up. And you're like, this little things over the years like that add up. And you're like, "Yeah, okay, now I get it. So it didn't just happen. Like, this little things throughout my career, even Steve Ottin Jr. would call me out for being, you know, you get cocky, man. Like, you get confident, you're beating up guys, and you get all this attention, and you're like, you know, you think, again, the world revolves around you. Then all of a sudden, one of these guys, older guys, or Lou, they humble you, and you're like, "Oh, snap, back to reality." Like, "Whoa, you're a fourth liner from Eureka, kid. Just, you got to be a good teammate." And like, "Oh, God, you're right. What am I doing?" So just that, sometimes it just takes higher authority to look at you and call you out. And you sometimes have to come back down to reality and figure out where you're at and what you need to do.
I love that. So, I mean, you're in the NHL and you're more or less getting pee-pee slapped by the GM, Lou Lamoriello. I think that today these kids that I see sometimes – I don't want to say kids are softer today, and Toph and I have talked about this on the podcast, but sometimes a coach will come down on a kid and the kid just shuts down. He puts his head down and he's like, oh, the coach doesn't like me, or, you know, he's playing favorites, yada, yada. What kind of thing would you say for advice for when a coach or, you know, a GM like, you know, Lou Lamoriello, one of the, you know, most famous GMs of probably NHL history, when they come down on you, like, how would you positively react? How would you tell a kid that, you know, if you get benched in juniors, or, you know, if you're put on the fourth line in midget major, what would you say to that kid, like, how he should respond and react?
Look at yourself in the mirror. That's what you do. Look at yourself in the mirror. Why do you think you're doing it? Do you think you're doing it because you're dominating? No. Do you think you're doing it because you're playing great? No. There's always a reason. I don't care if you scored two goals in that game. You didn't back check.
You didn't back check.
Cough the puck over there. You didn't do this. You know, I don't care what you did.
Thank you.
That's what you look at yourself in the mirror and look at it and be like, why is he doing this? Look at yourself and be like, oh, that's why. Oh, that too. But I did score, but oh God, I coughed the puck up there. Oh, I didn't get off. I had a bad change. Yeah, those things. Sometimes you're just caught up in yourself. You know, it's been easy for you your whole life. And all of a sudden you have a little bit of adversity and you get benched and you're like, what happened? I'm the best. Well, no, you're not. Look at yourself in the mirror and figure it out.
I love that.
Always something you did.
These, you know, it's not pros or junior guys. They get it. But, you know, these midget major, midget minor, you know.
Totally.
When I say to them, when they'll go out of town and they'll come back and they'll be in the gym with me, I say, well, how'd you play this weekend? And they always, their first thing is points. It's, well, I had two goals. And I said, well, why'd you say well? And I didn't say, how many points did you have? I said, how did you play? I tell them, you could play god awful and have two goals, or you could have no points and be the best player on the ice. And so, you know, I like what you just said a lot.
And you know what? And you know what else too is the parents too.
Ugh.
My dad would give me that, you know, he pumped me up and like, you're tough, play like it, you know, just pump up. But these parents, well, I don't know why my kid's sitting. The coach, it's the coach's fault. So these parents like dig at their kids too. And they're like, oh, it's everybody else's fault but yours. And it's just so obvious, man. And I go, no, it's not. Why would this coach bench you if you were playing great? That doesn't make sense. There's always something. But the parents don't. They don't look at it like that. And one thing to the parents. Your parents, they don't know a damn thing. Okay, they know you, but they don't know hockey. They just don't. For the most part, they don't. So you know, again, you got the onus is always on the kid. And if you're not, you could at that age. If you score a goal, yeah, fine. You're supposed to. If you want to be at the next level and you're still playing Triple H, whatever it is, like you better put some points up. But it's whoever does the little things throughout the game and getting back, playing like, let's say, Ryan O'Reilly did last night, not because he had a hat trick, because the dude busts his ass from one side to the other, gets back, breaks up plays, goes down, controls the play, does this, gets off there. Like, there's just so much to it. And I just don't think these parents really understand the game yet, and that's fine. That's fine. But whenever they're just like, oh, it's the coach, and I see it all the time, too, and I'm not even coaching youth hockey, and I understand that game that they play. So, again, you got to look at yourself in the mirror, man.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I remember when I was growing up, I distinctly remember the moment I was in a hotel room in Des Moines, Iowa, and my dad and mom, for whatever reason, decided to take the trip, and I was playing the USHL at the time, and I wasn't playing very well. My coach was really, really hard on me, and you know, I was, you know, probably bitching to my parents about all the stuff that we bitch about, and my dad just looks at me and he goes, he's hard on you? And I was like, yeah. He's like, good. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? He goes, that means he cares. Like, if he stops talking to you, then you have a problem. But if he's hard on you, that means he's trying to push you outside your comfort zone. He's trying to make you better. So maybe don't listen to the way that it's coming across, but listen to the message that's coming across and be better. And like, I still remember that, like all the stuff we talk about and the conversation that we're having right now, like I would be a completely different person had my parents not told me that message that day in Des Moines, Iowa, when I was probably at my lowest point in hockey. So
totally.
I totally agree with you. And I think a lot of that is on just the support system that the kids have to make sure that those lessons are coming across.
Again, the parents, they might not know the game, but they do know the kid. And that's what my dad always said. Like, I don't know hockey, but I do know Cam, and there's something going on right now. And we had to go through different things throughout my career too, but I look back at my career, honestly, anytime I sat a game out, anytime I went through a weird funk, anytime I did anything that was somewhat negative throughout my career, it was all on me. There was always a reason that I did that kind of panned out that way, meaning I turned the puck over or I just wasn't hitting guy or it just and at the time you just sometimes you're just lost and and you're like, no, it's not my fault. Somebody else, this isn't fair. No. You look back on it now and you're like, yeah, I was playing great. Yeah, I messed that one up. Yeah, now I get why you sat me there. It's always something that onus is always boils down to you.
I like that. I like that a lot. I mean, there's a stupid saying that we had in Omaha when I played juniors, and it was, you know, don't point fingers, point thumbs. Like, point it back yourself. If you're going to call somebody out, like, you better be able to say you played 100%, did everything right, which hockey is a game of mistakes. Nobody ever, even the best players in the NHL, do everything right, you know, in a game. So it always comes back to you and what you can do to play your best and make sure you're doing those little things.
If you know that, if that's your mindset, honestly, if you figure that out at a young age, that it's on you and it's only up to you to fix it kind of attitude, like, that will take you so far if you figure that out. Now, it's hard to figure that out as a kid because you're selfish. You don't know, you know, you're do, but your parents have to help you with that too. And really, really not necessarily be hard on you, but just be realistic. Like, wait, no. Yeah, you got a couple goals. But I think the parents right now, honestly, need to know that and really help teach these kids that way at a young age. Because if they figure that out, honestly, that will get them to the next level so much easier. It really, really will.
Yeah.
That's something that Toph and I, we recorded a podcast a week or two ago with our dads, because Toph and I mean, you know, my dad, Philly Cheese, you know, we both had parents that, were that way. They were never the kind that would call the coach and be like, well, why is Jeff sitting today? Or why is Topher not playing enough? They were kind of like the same thing. Look in the mirror and what can you do better? You know, we've been saying this whole podcast, you know, parents need to kind of let their kids fail, like allow that failure to happen and teach them how to pick themselves up. And obviously, you know, the career you had and the role you had, you obviously had to be super resilient. Because I mean, I'm sure there were games in the NHL where you played, I don't know, two shifts. Like how hard was that to stay prepared and stay in the game and that kind of thing? Cause I know a lot of guys, when they go up to juniors, they might be in a fourth line role their first year and they find it super hard. So what kind of advice would you give to, you know, those kind of players that are sitting on the bench and then all of a sudden, you know, 10 minutes later, got to go out there and make an impact?
Well, I look at these young kids on the Blues right now and, you know, I read everything and what the fans say, and I, you know, people calling to my show, like, why isn't they don't play Jordan Kyrou and they're not doing, how can he look, you're at that level, you need to figure out how to be productive. You need to figure out how to turn it on with sitting 7 minutes like that. If you're a good hockey player, you'll adapt to that. And it might be a little bit tough, but you will. And then once you figure that role out, where you can go out there every 5, 6, 7 minutes and you could be productive on the ice, and then you'll get a little bit more ice time, and then you'll mold your game. Now you're able to do anything. So I'm able to get up and go out there and figure out my game, not go try to go end to end and ditzy do. No, just keep it simple, but just do a little bit more each time. Like, that's just part of molding yourself into any role that you want. Cause the first role is going to be that fourth line role. Like, if you're not an unbelievably skilled player, you're not going to be on a top two line that, you know, so say if you're a kid and you make the OHL at a young age, okay, you need to be able to be productive on that fourth line, to be able to get up and get kicked up to the third line, to be able to hone on your skills on the third and second line, to do and kind of work your way up. But it all starts in that fourth line. A lot of these guys just could not figure it out. And all of a sudden they get pushed to the side, and maybe that slows their career down to a point where they give up, or maybe they, you know, it can go either way. But my point is, these young kids, and Robert Thomas just did it, man. He figured out how to get limited ice and be productive. And he got bumped up, then he got bumped up again. And now he just had a hell of a game last night. He's probably not going to get sent down back down to juniors because he adapted, man. He did, and it's fun to watch. But boy, oh boy, you got to start somewhere, and you got to figure it out quick because somebody else will take the job.
Yeah, for sure. And correct me if I'm wrong, I want to get your take on this too, because I have a little bit of a unique perspective because I've been on the other side of the bench as a coach. I always felt that the players that played the best were the most engaged on the bench. Like, they, after a shift, they would come off and talk to their line mates about what just happened on the shift. If something happened on the ice, like if somebody blocked a shot or somebody took a hit to make a play, they were the first people up to, you know, congratulate them or whatever it may be. Like, so if you're a third or fourth liner and you're not doing a ton on the ice, like you're not getting on the ice very much, like you could still be engaged in the game and you can still be a huge part of your team's success by being engaged. Like, what would your thoughts be on that?
Everybody's different with that too. There's rah-rah guys. I was a rah-rah guy, of course. And there's not. But if somebody gets into a scrap or has a big hit and you just keep your ass parked on the bench and you don't acknowledge that, I don't care what kind of personality you have here, rah-rah guy or not. No, you get up and you compliment your teammates and you pat them on the ass. You do this, you do that. That's just being a good teammate. I mean, look, you take away what's going on in the ice. Like, your teammates are playing well, acknowledge it. Everybody sees it, and everybody sees it when you don't. That GM or whoever, the coach, is looking at you, and you're not getting up for the boys. They're looking at that. They're looking at you like, yeah, he's selfish. He's not going to last long. I swear to God, man, I would. If somebody goes out there and gets in a scrap or gets a big hit or makes an awesome block or whatever the case is, everybody's on a bench like, yeah, and the one kid that's pouting in the corner in a far bench and he's not acknowledging anything, yeah, I'm done with him. I'm done with those kind of guys. So you have to figure it out. Even if you're pissed at the world, which I was at times, I'd get up for the guys and just suck it up and be like, yeah, good job. You know, even if it's a guy that took my job and was taking my job and doing it, David Clarkson was one guy that got called up and he started taking my job and da-da-da. And after every game he played well, I'd go up to him, give him a big hug. And did I want to do that? I mean, yeah, but not really. I know he's taking my job, but I did it anyway. And it just, little things like that, man, they honestly go a long way. And it's not always going to be smooth sailing. But if you're a good teammate and you figure out how to be a good teammate, whether you like it or not, it's telling you, it just goes a long way. And everybody's watching you, whether when you do it and when you don't do it, especially.
That's phenomenal advice. I mean, I like what you said about, you know, even if a guy's coming to take your job, like he's not coming to, and whether it's juniors or college or pro, it's your job, you know, college and juniors, it's your spot. But I mean, basically, you know, your job, that guy's not coming in and he didn't get traded there because he's saying, you know, F Cam Jansen, I'm going to kick this guy out of the league. The team brought him in. And so he's your teammate. So you got to support all your teammates. And then whenever you get your opportunity, don't look at how everyone else is playing. Like, make your game the best it can be that night when you get called upon. You know, it's not going to help you or the team to, you know, in that situation, like look at Clarkson and be like, God, I hope he fails tonight. I hope he, because then you just bring in negative energy and you're the most positive human being I think I've ever met. Anytime anyone's around you, they leave the room smiling, they're happy, they want to go take on the world. And that kind of energy is infectious. And that's the kind of energy, you know, me as a coach, I want in the locker room. Me as a trainer, I want in the gym. I want everyone to have that energy because positivity breeds positivity.
Oh, totally. And again, not everybody's like that though. And you can't force a personality on somebody either, but you could teach them how to be a good teammate and there's ways to do it. So not everybody's going to be like me where I'm like, I'm unique in a way with that. But you could definitely mold somebody into being a better teammate and knowing when to get the guys going and talk to, you know, just be a good teammate overall, man. And again, it's difficult to do. And I've taken guys' spots too. And I'll give you an example, DJ King. I came in here, poor guy, like, I get all this attention. I'm the hometown boy. I'm loud. I'm a funny interview. I could just tell, like, that must have been so hard on him because he's like, whoa, I'm beating the hell out of guys in St. Louis. They bring this kid in. He's getting all this attention. He's doing this. You know, he's from there. I got all these people around, you know, media, everything. And he was so cool to me. And he could have been an ass and been like, oh, God, he's taking. But Kinger was the best and the nicest guy in the world. And he goes to Washington and played. He played a couple years after that. But, you know, so it goes both ways. Anyway, being a good teammate, again, it honestly goes a long way. And you guys know, as far as being coaches, you see that. And you don't want any mopey guys on the team. They're just about themselves. Everybody's about themselves. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, you go out there and you try to be the best teammate you possibly can. I know it's a cliche, but boy, oh, boy, it goes a long way.
Yeah, for sure. And is DJ King, is he the guy that just got the job in Rockford now that Carlton went up to the Blackhawks when Quenville got fired?
I don't know. King, really?
Well, it's Derek. Carlton? It's Derek King that is the new head coach in Rockford. So I don't know if that's the same guy you're talking about.
No.
Gotcha.
No. I think DJ's Dwight.
Ah, Dwight Schrute King. I like it.
Dwight Schrute King.
The toughest Dwight I've ever seen in my life.
I don't know. Dwight Schrute was pretty tough, man.
Oh, man. Kinger was bad as a bone, dude. He knocked guys straight up out. And he was the scariest looking human being in the world. One time we were at a rookie party in San Francisco, and we went to this nicest restaurant in the world. You know, one of the nicest, and we get this room, and me and King are so drunk, and he's so scary when he's drunk, but he's a happy, funny drunk, but he's a, 6'3". He's got the head the size of my house. You know, his feet are all mangled up. Like, he's horrifying. And we're hockey fighting each other with our Hugo Boss suits on, bleeding all of our suits in this unbelievable restaurant. And Eric Brewer and Jackman are like, oh my, get these guys on the bus. They had to carry us. Plus, we're play fighting, but we're just like big dumb animals that are like 6-year-old animals is what we were doing. Like, we looked like a bunch of clowns. It was the funniest thing in the world. And but boy, oh boy, he is the scariest Dwight I've ever met in my life.
That is hilarious.
They were pissing us.
That's awesome. Well, I wanted to ask you too. Both Jeff and I have transitioned out of the game here over the past couple of years. Jeff as a player and myself as a coach. And you've made an awesome transition into the media side of things. And, you know, I've always thought that if I went back knowing what I know now, just seeing the game from 20,000 feet instead of being in it every day, I feel like I'd be a much better coach and much better player. Like, what are some things that you might have learned being out of the game and just reflecting back on your career? Like, not necessarily is there anything that you would have done differently, but just what are your thoughts transitioning out of it, thinking about the game today?
Oh, the things that I'd do differently, we don't have time for that. But trust me, I don't even want to. If there's children listening, I don't even want to get down the couple of paths I went down. But we'll do that some other time. But I will say this: I didn't pay attention to the game enough when I played. I paid attention to me and my world, and I lived two separate lives, especially when I played in St. Louis. I had my hockey buddies and my team, and we did this, and then I had my other world where I'm from here, and then all my other buddies and my high school buddies and my cousins and this and that. So I didn't pay attention. I didn't care about any other hockey player besides myself. And I know it sounds selfish. Now, I wasn't a selfish teammate because I cared about my teammates and stuff like that, but I didn't pay attention to the game. And now, when I transition into hockey and talking about, I'm sorry, transition to radio and having to dissect these games left and right, I pay attention to hockey more now in the past couple of years than I ever have in my life. Maybe when I was a kid, but I didn't know what I was watching then. Do you get my point?
Yeah.
So if I go back and really study the game, it just would have made my transition. Put it this way. When I first retired, I got a job right away. Boom. That's how I had to retire, because these radio stations, they wanted to hire me. They kind of both threw me contracts, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to retire. This is great. I finally know what I want to do. It's going to be radio. And I kind of knew I was going to do that anyway, but I didn't. But when I first started having to, like, you know, talk about the Blues and dissect different plays, I struggled, man. Like, I did. I'm like, oh, what's the term for that? Or what's this? Or how do I fix that? But now it's like, gosh almighty, like, I didn't pay attention enough to each and every play during my career, because there's so much else going on. A lot of guys are like that too. But now, I mean, I dissect these games like a coach, and I rewind them, and I rewind shifts, and I rewind how plays develop, and I do this, and I do that, and I do, because you're doing that so much when you're playing, it's like, ugh. But now it's like, holy cow. So I guess I'd say I just pay attention more to the game itself throughout my career. Leading into my transition in the radio would have been a lot easier. But now it's like, oh my God, I'm like, I'm rewinding these games. I go through them. So if anybody wants to, like, have an argument with me on a certain, you know, something I said, maybe about somebody's play, then I got, like, video backing me up. Like, here's why I said that. Look at this play. Look at him turn the puck over. Look at this. Look at that. So I don't know. I'm a hockey nerd now, and I never was. How's that?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And I had the same kind of realization when I got into coaching, because as a player, you know, I always kind of, my mantra was like, I love to read and react and I don't need too much information, blah, 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 blah.
Exactly. And you're right.
Yeah.
That's a good point right there.
Yeah.
Right.
And then when I got into coaching, it just, and the guys that I worked for, they're like, you know, PhDs in freaking hockey in systems and skill work and all that kind of stuff. And the amount that I learned and the amount that I realized how much of a better player I would have been had I, you know, the same thing that you're talking about. It's just being a student of the game. And you talk to all these skill guys now and you're still in the NHL game and see the Blues all the time. Like some of the best players are just, they're curious. Like they always are looking and finding ways to get better and they're always asking questions. And yeah, I totally agree with you, man. I had the exact same kind of thoughts when I left the game as a player and I can relate to what you said big time. Jeff, how about you?
Absolutely. I said it on, you know, our podcast that we did the first one, just Topher and I never watched hockey growing up. Like never, I've never been really into sports until, you know, I signed with Boston. I was like, well, shit, I should probably watch them so I could learn their systems, because I could get called up any day now. Never got that call. God damn it. But you know, I started watching and I was like, oh, watching these guys, I'm learning things. I'm watching Patrice Bergeron, who I think is one of the best players in the last 10 years, watching what he does defensively, stick pressure, his brain, like it's amazing. And, you know, so once I started watching, I was like, God, if I would have watched hockey growing up, I would probably be way better.
I'm a better hockey player now than I've ever been. I attest to that.
I've seen you play. We played Blues alumni together. You know, we're in the Bluesers chat group. I see this guy play, you know, whenever I make it to the men's league, that St. Louis has the best morning men's league scrimmage in the country. Tuesday, Thursday mornings. I'll blow it up. You know, all the ex-pro guys and a couple older guys who play juniors or whatever, they all get together and play. And I don't get there as much as I'd like to because, you know, last time I played, I took another puck in the face from Barrett Jackman. But it's unreal. And Cam is literally way better now than when he played in the NHL.
Well, it's just, I'm serious. So, like, I'm a student of the game now, and I have been for a couple years, and I like to pick out, anybody could be like, oh, you see that toe drag? Well, I like to pick out the little plays that maybe started it. Like maybe Petro's in a corner and he's got two guys on him. And all of a sudden he spins off a guy and he kicks the puck between his legs for a little breakout pass to Robert Thomas circling low and slow. And all of a sudden you're like, whoa, he just got three guys caught with a little play. Like just little things like that. And I guess when I played, I was thinking about the lifestyle more about than the game, I'd say. You're thinking about everything else that comes around and this, and you're doing that. And it's just, you're not necessarily a student of the game, but now it's like, holy cow, just watching these games vividly, man. And, you just learn a lot. You learn a lot of little things and it all comes natural because you just did it for 20 years. But at the time, again, I was focused on the lifestyle and this and the media and blah, 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 and popularity and whatnot. That where maybe if I go back and just really would have studied the game a little bit more. But then again, you're just playing hockey all day. The last thing I want to do is watch more hockey. That's all I did. You know what I mean? So maybe you would have got burnt out. I don't know. But that's probably one of the things I can go back and be like, yeah, maybe I should have been a little bit more astute of a game.
No, that's right. Well, I mean, your personality and what you're talking about has led you to a pretty awesome start to your life after hockey. How are you enjoying being in the media world and what kind of things do you have up your sleeve there?
Well, gosh, I mean, I got my own radio show. I'm on two different shows on one station, and I'm hired by another station, KMOX, that I do podcasts for, and then the Blues have me do stuff. So, I mean, it's nonstop, and it's great, and I love it. And it comes natural to me, too, and I put a spin on it because of the personality aspect of things and being from here and the story and knowing everybody. So it's perfect. It all kind of – a lot of these transitions whenever you play like this, when you didn't make – you know, $70 million, like let's say a Jay Bomeister. Like, yeah, I feel bad for Jay Bomeister. He's going to be sitting games out. But the dude made $70 million. He doesn't have to do it for the rest of his life.
Yeah, what's up, Blazers?
I made a little bit of money and did my thing. And I'm doing great. But I got to work for the rest of my life too. And so a lot of guys in my situation are like, they don't have the personality that I do. They don't have that. I get, you know, getting traded to the Blues was the best thing in the world for my career. Like, let's be honest here. I mean, it was the best thing in the world. I know everybody, sponsors, whatever the case, whatever I wanted to do, somebody would help me because I know all these people from playing here and being from here and things like that. A lot of guys aren't in that situation, so they're just lost when they're retired, man. And the money starts draining down, and you got bills to pay, and then the wife starts bitching, and whatever the case is. So it's a struggle, and a lot of guys are struggling right now with that. And a lot of people are like, I'm not feeling sorry for that, but it is a weird feeling. It really is. You feel lost because you're doing this sport your whole life, and you know a lot of guys aren't educated, and not that that necessarily matters nowadays because you know, really, what's your skill set? You can make money in one way or the other with if you have a skill set, but a lot of guys don't know what their skill set is when they leave hockey, and they're going through a tough time. And I definitely was fortunate to get, you know, a couple calls about radio. I'm like, yeah, okay, this works. And then, you know, you work your ass off with it, and all of a sudden, you know, you got your own show, you know, six times a week doing everything. So it all worked out, man. But I do work my ass off. I do, big time.
What, so, I mean, obviously I didn't make anywhere near the money you did playing in the NHL as long as you did. You know, I made decent money playing hockey. I'm nowhere near set up for the rest of my life, obviously. But, you know, I did pretty well for myself. But I knew, I wasn't making the kind of money that NHLers were, and B, that hockey doesn't last forever. So I started my training company 7 years ago. So 7 years before my last year pro. So I think it was after my third or fourth year pro. To get my feet wet, to, you know, start doing things outside of hockey, prepare myself for life after. What kind of things would you say to you know, guys in juniors or guys in college? Like, what do you think they should be doing? Because hockey's going to end, whether it ends after juniors or it ends after college or it ends after pro. What kind of things do you think they should be doing outside of the game to prepare themselves for life after?
Well, what are you good at? I mean, figure out what you want to do. Like, what would you want to do? Do you want to be an agent? I mean, are you great with numbers? Which waved bye-bye to me a long time ago. I'll tell you that right now.
All three of us, don't worry.
I got a personality, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to be on the radio, and people are going to laugh, and maybe I'll mess up here and there, but that's just Cam, and he's from Eureka, and he played here, and he lives an unbelievable life, so we're going to listen to him anyway. You can tell he does his homework, and he knows the game. So, like, I figured that out, but you got to think, like, yeah, hockey's going to last. It's not going to last. So what are you good at, and what do you like to do? You know what I mean? Do you want to be around hockey? Do you want to learn how to be a leader in the locker room to help you with the next business that you're going to run, whether it's construction, a painting company, whatever the hell it is? Like, take advantage of leadership in a locker room, like, and different personalities in a locker room, and actually the people that you meet too. I mean, hockey is just a melting pot of different ideas, and guys are come up to me for, and they're like, Cam, hey, check this out. We're doing this. Hey, you want to get on this? Or blah, 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 blah. I mean, there's so many guys, so many loyal hockey guys in the world to where, like, let them help you. Like, call guys, brainstorm with guys, do this, do that. Look what other guys are doing. Look how other guys took advantage of their career, whether it was playing in the NHL or just going to college, and see what they did. And successful guys that came out of hockey and started a company, but take advantage of the unique locker room, the unique lifestyle that you live with all these guys that are all good dudes that are all going to be doing the same thing here in the next couple of years, 'cause they're all going to retire or whatever the case is, and brainstorm with them, but figure out what your skill set is and figure out what you like to do. And just kind of ease into it. Still play the games, play as long as you can. And then once you're ready, you'll know what you want, but you got to start earlier. So when you do retire, because you blew your knee out and you just can't get it back or whatever, you're not just like, okay, now what? So try to do it in advance, figure out what you like. And again, you got a ton of guys that you met over the years that you forgot about. They even forgot about. And absolutely. Like, look them up on Facebook, get a hold of them and brainstorm with some of these guys, man. Everybody wants to help everybody in the hockey world. We got it good, man. You just got to realize that.
Absolutely. And you know, that just to bring in our buddy our mutual friend, Shannon Lewandowski, going off of what you said, I mean, he created a group, a community, a business called Hockey Players in Business. And it's all about coaches, hockey players, whether you played pro, junior, whether you work at a rink, if you're in hockey, you know, you can join this group. And, you know, it's on LinkedIn. I think it's on Facebook. I would just Google it. It's called Hockey Players in Business. And it's just hockey people coming together, trying to help each other out. Because as we know, you know, whether you played in the NHL, you played AAA, you played AA hockey, gives you so many gifts for the rest of your life through learning how to be a good teammate, learning resiliency, mental toughness, preparation, pushing yourself past what you thought was possible. So it's a pretty cool company. And, you know, it's like you just said, he brought all those things together. Reach out to your former teammates, learn about things that you're interested in while you're still playing. You know, some of these junior guys, they sit around all day long and nap and Netflix and chill and snap their girl and whatever. Like, start reading, yeah. start looking into something else that you're interested in, because hockey does not last forever.
Oh, that's another thing I did, man. I started just getting curious. Like, when I got sent down the minors the last couple of years, I just was curious on so many other things that were going on, and reading and doing this. And, you know, you get stuck in this weird trend when you're playing, where you have so much downtime and you got money and you're just like, I'm just going to go hang out with the guys, or I'm going to just play my video game, which I did all the time because it was nice relaxation. You got away from all the stress, you get away from it, but eventually you're going to have to figure out what's going on in the world, what you want to do afterwards, how you're going to make extra revenue, how you're going to bring in some money, how you're going to do this. Like, there's a lot that's going to happen when you retire, and you just need to be ahead of the curve on it, man. You really do. And it's difficult, and you might not know, but once you do know, you're going to be like, okay. And then all that hockey experience you've had over the years and all that work, it's all going to turn into something positive going in a different direction with whatever you want to do. Does that make sense? Like, all that hard work you're getting up, your training, all that discipline that you've learned over the years is going to help you to figure out what this next skill set you want to do in your next chapter of your life, because all that hard work you put into hockey is going to translate into this.
Very cool. Very cool, Cam. Well, I think we're going to end it there. We got a lot of content. You're an unbelievable guy. I can't thank you enough for coming on. I told Toph that this was the most excited I was for a guest, because, you know, I've always looked up to you. Anyone from St. Louis that is even probably within 10 years of your age, you know, everyone looks up to you. I feel like you really paved the way for us, and you spread that energy and love and positivity and tell everyone that it's theirs for the taking. So really excited to have you on here. We're really excited to be able to follow your career in the media. You know, follow Cam on Twitter and whatever, Instagram. You know, he's with the Blues, he's with KMOX, like, check him out. Very entertaining human, very knowledgeable. And, you know, as long as he stays away from wearing shirts with skulls on them, we're going.
I see that bad boy way. I see that. I brought that trend to Harry's back in like 2005, 2006. I thought I was going to come back with it. Didn't work.
Yeah, you should have left it in 2005, 2006. But
I know. I blame it on Kate. She bought it for me.
Well, right. You know, we appreciate you coming on the show, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah, right, thanks, Cam. Appreciate it.
No problem.
All right, see you, buddy.
Bye.